To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more as we return for the third and likely final time to the doomed world of Damnos. Once, it was a humble mining colony, a frozen husk of rock and industry whose people endured the cold with the stoic resolve of those who know their lives are mere cogs in the lumbering behemoth of the Imperial war machine. Yet beneath the permafrost slumbered an ancient power, long forgotten from a bygone age, as this was in fact a tomb world to the dreaded legions of the Necrons. When first disturbed by a routine Mechanicus party, the awakening plunged the world into sheer horror, and the name of Damnos was forever redefined as a dark stain in the bitter annals of the Ultramarines. The second company of that venerable chapter bled terribly in their defense. Cato Sicarius himself was struck low. Dreadnoughts and heroes were lost, but despite their best efforts, Damnos was lost to the Imperium and reclaimed for the glory of the Awoken dynasty. Yet, in the waning days of the 41st millennium, the Ultramarines returned, and this time would not be denied their retribution. The liberation of Damnos was similarly bloody, though ended quite differently, with their campaign culminating in the destruction of the central tomb complex and the banishment of a transcendent Catan, seemingly ending the Necron threat once and for all. But the soulless machines are not so easily denied. They are older than memory, more patient than any human could possibly comprehend, and will never relent in their pursuit at restoring their old empire and seizing the galaxy in their metallic palms. The dynasty which once ruled Damnos never relented in their claims, nor forgave the mortals for desecrating and destroying what was once a bustling tomb world. And so, as the 42nd millennium ticked over, and as the Indomitus Crusade came to its end, the Necrons determined that the time was right to return. Across the void, their fleets drifted in silence. Across the ice fields, their phalanxes stirred. And once more, the frozen wastes of Damnos were to become a battlefield. Thus began what is now referred to as the Third War for Damnos, an ongoing war zone in the galactic southeast, which currently knows no end. Unlike the first invasion, where the Imperium was caught unawares, and unlike the second, where the Ultramarines hurled themselves upon the ice in vengeance, this was destined to become an apocalyptic conflict, with the forces on either side rising to such numbers that Damnos would be forever changed. The Necrons, relentless in their warpath, would stop at nothing to reclaim their territory, seeing no alternative scenario to their absolute victory. For the Imperium, however, their return was a wound reopened. The scars of the prior wars had never truly healed, with cities still languishing in ruin, and the new layers of ice now concealing the bones of the countless fallen. Defending this world for the third time would force the Ultramarines to confront not only their deathless foes, but to also contend with the shadows of their past defeat. Some have speculated on the return of the Necrons as pointing towards some strategic value hidden deep within the world, whereas others believe it to be a clear sign of their undying spite and that they are simply seeking revenge upon a foe who would dare to question their rule. We will explore their motives in due time, but whatever the reason, the result was the same, and the Ultramarines were once more called to war, to fight and die upon the ice. This, then, is that tale of war. There is no end to this conflict, and as it so stands today, the war zone remains unresolved, as an open campaign fought above the tombs of an ancient empire and the bones of those who fought against them. And so, my dearest friends, I do believe that it is now time for us to begin. This will likely be the final time we explore this world, and so as we return, let us once more soak in the frigid cold as we learn of the final battle of Damnos. The Necrons have always been creatures with a sense of inevitability. Ever since their re-emergence within the galactic scene, they have advanced through the cosmos with the same steady patience, grinding inexorably against any and all forms of resistance, like a glacier, slowly growing through the seas. But Damnos was no longer theirs, and it had been many years since the final tomb complexes were destroyed, leaving the planet firmly in the grips of the Imperium of Man. The reconstruction efforts upon Damnos necessitated a prodigious workforce and an even larger trove of materials, yet being so far from the heart of Imperial space, their work had been rather slow, with the old capital of Kellanport still bearing the scars of the past wars. Still, the Ultramarines had placed this world under their protection and had set up an astropathic station within the capital with the express order of contacting McCragg should any threat rear its ugly head. This quickly proved itself to be a most prudent decision, as it was during the era Indomitus that the realm of Ultramar received a desperate call for aid. Their cries spoke of silent vessels gliding in from the system's rim, their signatures phasing in and out of vision, yet with a course undeniably set towards their home. Upon the surface, the Imperials watched in terror as the skies darkened beneath unnatural clouds, broken only by lashes of emerald light rippling across the upper atmosphere, coiling like lightning through the air. And then the invasion began. These were the Necrons, and by all accounts they had returned to settle the score and to restore dynastic order to their old world. The ease to which the Necrons invade is always rather unnerving, and upon Damnos, this was no different. Immense obelisks and sprawling tomb structures phased into reality upon the surface, and with the groaning of ancient metals, they opened up, allowing the undying legions to march out once more into the snow. Pylons pulsed, staining the ice fields with a sickly viridian glow, illuminating swarms of skittering scarabs, congregating around the far larger Canoptech spiders, before diving down and burrowing themselves into the frost. Though, indeed, the Imperials had believed that the subterranean tombs were destroyed to their last, they were quickly to be proven wrong. The deepest of crypts, first constructed in a bygone age, arose through the ice, bursting out upon the surface, containing further legions, pristine and untouched by the ravages of time. At their head stood the new lords of Damnos, quickly identified as belonging to the venerable Zarakan dynasty. Initial scans revealed that they had likely been diverted from the Necron forces of the Pariah Nexus, and so perhaps this campaign was intended to draw the Imperials away from that war zone so as to split them up and destroy them. This would make sense, as the strategic value of Damnos cannot be overlooked. Though the world itself is but a frozen husk, it is situated rather closely to McCragg, and thanks to the established trade routes, its fall would open up the home worlds of the Ultramarines to a Necron invasion, a danger which had to be halted by any means necessary. But several captains wondered if the reclamation of Damnos was more to do with the ancient pride burning in the metallic hearts of the Necron Lords. Their forces, though successful in the initial Damnos incident, had been denied the glory of victory during the Second War. And to make matters worse, their tombs had been torn open, defiled, and destroyed. Thus, perhaps their return was as much to do with the reclamation of old territories as it was with erasing their old humiliations at losing a conflict to such a young and ignorant species. In any event, the defenders of Damnos could not help but feel the weight of history repeating itself. The Marines had not yet arrived, and so it was down to the planetary defense forces to hold the line. Yet this was simply impossible when faced off against such a relentless foe. In every battle, the Imperials were pushed back, forced to flee beneath arcs of gas fire, though the psychological tolls of war only grew darker when the ice began to melt, revealing the preserved remains of those who had fought and died during the Second War. The onslaught was truly terrible, with doomsday arcs prowling the broken ice fields, their cannons vaporizing armored columns with contemptuous ease. Night scythes darted through the skies, briefly landing behind vulnerable positions before offloading new warriors to ravage the poor defenders. In an astonishingly short time, Damnos was once again pushed to the precipice of defeat. Vital production plants were obliterated, supply lines severed, cities burned, and soon enough, only Kellanport remained as the sole location to be free from the Necron presence. Looking out, all that could be spied within the gloom was of pylons, faintly glowing in the distance, pulsing with the malevolence of alien light. Yet the call for aid had been sent, and this was a conflict which the Ultramarines were honor-bound to answer. The Imperium of Man, at this point, had asserted its dominion over the galaxy for just over 10,000 years, and it did not abandon its worlds over the claims of decrepit automatons who should have stayed buried within their fading tombs. Planets may be shattered, cities may be razed, and populations may be lost, but so long as a world provides even the smallest mote of value to all of mankind, then it shall not be forgotten. Damnos, of course, was no exception. And when the Necrons returned, the echoes of their awakening quickly reached Macragge, and the Sons of Gilliman did not hesitate to deploy their available forces and to put down the Necrons once more. Yet this was not the proud mustering of the Second War. Their chapter was at this point roughly split, with some fighting within the Indomitus Crusade, some campaigning upon the world of Vigilus, whilst the remaining troops were stationed within the realm of Ultramar, defending against the unexpected invasion of Mortarion and his plague wars. And so, quite unfortunately, the strike force, labeled as Trevinius, only contained around 40 Marines, consisting of two squads of veterans, all of whom had previously fought upon Damnos, two squads of scouts, and the Redemptor Dreadnought, known as Brother Gabinius. Make no mistake, for despite the strengths of the Astartes, 40 men would not be sufficient in defending a planet against a fully fledged Necron invasion. Yet they had already done so much, and they could not abandon this world in its hour of need. As such, they swallowed their pride and summoned their allies, calling for the cousins of their successor chapters to ready their guns and to march for Damnos. The largest force to answer came from the Libators, a savage brotherhood, infamous for their brutal conduct in war and their grim rituals in draining the blood of their foes to bring honor to the Emperor of Man. Their entire 8th Company descended upon the ice, and though the Necrons possessed no blood to spill, they would still be more than ready to shatter the phalanxes across the snow. Soon after, they were joined by the Iron Hounds, whose reputation as an armored war host was well earned. Their contribution was of a trio of heavy land raiders which rumbled across the tundra, steel treads grinding towards the old tombs, and guns levied against the constructs. Last came the brazen consuls, stalwart and uncompromising, their 6th Company resplendent in burnished copper plate. Known for their aristocratic recruitment practices, they were experts in combat, as well as extended survival missions, traits which would soon prove themselves as invaluable for what would become the long war for Damnos. Put together, they did not represent the full might of the chapter, yet they were enough to make the Necrons pay for every inch of ice, and they would not hesitate to die before abandoning the doomed world. To shore up their numbers, the Ultramarines had also brought several regiments of the Ultramar PDF in the hopes that they could man the defensive posts and form a bulwark against the undying legions. At their command was the captain of the Ultramarines 8th Company, a marine known as Helios, and his strategy was to utilize the ferocious tenacity of his brothers to charge out in a vicious counterattack. Strike Force Trevinius would form the spearhead, riding within the land raiders of the Iron Hounds, clearing a path deep into enemy territory, which their brothers would rapidly fill, hopefully linking the ravaged settlements together, which would then be defended by the PDF. The first clashes, however, were found within the frozen streets of Kellanport, which had at this point come under attack from the Necron forces. The buildings, half buried in snow, became redoubts for the Imperials to defend, with bolter fire and las guns flaring from behind broken windows, whilst Gauss beams glittered through the darkening ruins. Here, the Libators made their name, charging out to strike with a sense of ruthlessness seldom seen amidst the successors of the Ultramarines. They fell upon the Necrons, chainswords roaring and melter guns searing, carving them apart until the streets were all but clear. In the canyons north of Kellanport, Strike Force Trevinius launched its armored charge, racing across the ice fields, their treads chewing through snow and rubble alike. Reaching their target, the Marines disembarked, pulverizing the deathly machines with precise bursts of bolter fire, whilst the land raiders opened up on the larger constructs, bringing them down in a heap of necrodermis slag. With them strode the venerable dreadnought Gabinius, his heavy flamer melting down a score of warriors before crushing several more within his great fist. But the Necrons did not retreat, and the Imperial victory within the canyon quickly revealed itself as a diabolical trap. As the armor columns pushed deeper, running down ever more warriors, the walls themselves suddenly split apart, revealing a network of immense obelisks rising up and out of the ice. Their crystalline cores began to glow with an emerald fire, before several doomsday arcs materialized from hidden tombs, opening up with screams of heavy gorse fire. Entire squads of guardsmen were vaporized in an instant, whilst one of the land raiders was sliced in half, left as a pathetic wreck, though its machine spirit fought to the bitter end, still firing its guns, despite the crew all being dead. Brother Gabinius fought valiantly, at this point joined by 2 ironclad dreadnoughts of the Libators, forming a squad who tore apart the obelisks, dragging them down even as the gorse beams carved through their sarcophagi. Brother Attius fought on to ensure the Imperials could push through the ice, being last seen locked in combat with a Triarch Stalker before both were buried in snow as the canyon collapsed above them. As they reached the closest Hive city, the Marines split off, leaving the brothers of the Brazen Consuls to clear the streets and to then rejoin with the main forces elsewhere. Given their martial prowess, which is impressive even by Astartes standards, they made short work of the implacable legions, steadily moving from hab to hab, eliminating every last Necron with their precise bursts of fire. Yet despite these scant victories, they were facing off against an undying foe, and in the wake of every battle, the broken Necron remained simply reanimated, rising from their apparent deaths to rejoin in the endless march. The Marines, however, were gradually losing numbers, and at this rate, they would simply be ground down through the sheer attrition of war. But they could not yield. They could not allow all the death to be for naught, and they could not allow Damnos to fall. The Ultramarines and their allies had stood firm, but firmness alone does not win wars. Their endurance could not halt the creeping advance of the Necrons forever, and the Imperials were only stretching themselves thinner and thinner with each new attack. Yet it was then, as the relentless wave of the Marines finally seemed to break and began to roll back, that aid arrived. The Imperium is a realm fractured and endless, where calls for succor often vanish into the void unanswered. Yet among the Astartes, there remains a bond, unbreakable and unquestionable. The plea of Ultramar had not been ignored, and across the stars, many others had turned their gaze to Damnos and made themselves ready to fight. In high orbit, countless starships burst out from warp travel, their heavy batteries opening up into the Necron fleets, pulverizing the ancient ships beneath the sheer weight of Imperial fire. It had been decreed that the system could not be allowed to fall, and so the fleets of two chapters, joined with an armada of the Imperial Navy, had been assembled, and they were more than equipped to dominate the skies of Damnos. The first to arrive were the White Scars. True to their ways, they came as a swift, spearheaded force, blazing past the Mandeville Point at such speed that the Ultramarines initially feared that they were Necron reinforcements. Nevertheless, their vessels cut through the void like hunting falcons, their engines burning white hot as they darted through the chaos towards Damnos before deploying their brothers down upon the ice. Biker squads tore across the frozen wastes, outpacing even the skimming destroyers who were helpless in targeting the nimble outriders. Attack craft roared over the ridge, delivering mobile units to strike against the Necrons, harrying the phalanxes before vanishing out into the snowstorms. The hunters of Chogoris were quickly joined by the forces of the Salamanders, who had assembled a heavy strike force whose presence sparked a glimmer of hope amidst the battered populace. The Sons of Vulcan deployed in the northern crags of Damnos Prime, escorting several refugee columns towards safer bastions, which they stood firm to defend. Against the bitter colds of Damnos, they lit fires for the huddled Imperials, a gesture which may seem small in the scale of a galactic war. Yet to those who stood upon the brink of annihilation, they were as mighty as any Titan. After only a short few weeks, the renewed Imperial forces had formed several safe routes across the planet, connecting many of the larger Hive cities, all of which were now defended by the troops of the Imperial Guard. Expeditions by the White Scars revealed that several of the mining complexes had been transformed under Necron control into reclamation foundries, where the most battered of Necrodermis remains were reformed into new warriors before being marched out into the fray. Fort Thrakken, on the brink of being overrun, was saved from total destruction by the Ultramarines before being promptly reinforced by the Guard so that it could stand as a fallback point for further attacks into the field. The brazen consuls, with their armor shining in a copper hue beneath the Damnosian sun, held critical junctions against the unending waves of constructs, stubbornly holding the line to buy time for the wider Imperial host. Thus did Damnos shift from inevitable defeat into what could almost be described as an even battle. The Astartes fought as though a choir, with the steady hymns of Ultramar, boosted by the deep roars of Nocturne, joined with the thunderous cry of Chogoris, together defying the silent and relentless approach of the dynasty. Yet, this unity was not some guarantee of victory. The Necrons, instantly adjusting their command protocols, adapted to the arrival of the Imperials, deploying additional phalanxes to perfectly counter the Imperial offensive. Where the White Scars harried, interceptor crafts were unleashed, their crescent shapes darting down from the cloud layer with an uncanny speed to blast apart the bike squads mid-ride. Where the salamanders burned, Cryptex reconfigured their pylons to channel storms of entropic energy, draining the heat from every flamer and drowning the lights of every fire. Where the Ultramarines stood fast, the ground itself was reshaped, collapsing beneath their bastions as tunneling constructs erupted from below, spewing out swarms of scarabs and nimble wraiths. The war then entered into a new phase, one where both sides needed to anticipate the other's movements and to counter them before they were even launched. The Imperium could not claim dominance, but neither could they yield. For every phalanx shattered, another would rise, but for every fortress that fell, another was claimed. For a time, it seemed as though Damnos itself might shatter under the weight of the war, as the ice continued to crack beneath the fury of orbital bombardments, and as the skies burned with the fires of the Void War, still raging in the frigid silence of space. It seemed as though the reinforcements had brought survival, but that they weren't quite enough to seize victory. Still, only time would tell if their forces would be sufficient, and maybe some semblance of pride could be found, simply from the fact that Damnos was yet to fall. The wars of the 41st millennium were seldom to be decided in brief moments of clarity, and the same can certainly be said for those raging within the 42nd. Rare is the battle won in a single stroke, and rarer still are the wars concluded with absolute certainty, or where one side knows for a fact that their foe has been defeated so resoundingly that they will never rear their vile heads ever again. More often, the conflicts of our age are ground into a bloody stalemate, where victory and defeat merely mingle in a haze of ash and ruin, until no living soul can say which side has truly prevailed. And this, my dearest friends, has been the outcome to Damnos. The arrival of the Ultramarines and the later reinforcements from the White Scars and Salamanders, though assuredly helpful, were only just enough to preserve the world from a swift annihilation. Their combined fury halted the Necron advance, though it did not turn the tides, and rather, the world has now been bogged down in an unending mire of resistance. For all their courage, the Imperials could not break the cold inevitability of the enemy. The Necrons still advance, with their phalanxes reforming, no matter how many were destroyed, and their obelisks rising anew, no matter how many were toppled. Damnos, once a tomb world, and later an Imperial territory, is now simply a deadlocked war zone, where neither side can gain the upper hand. Cities are fought over and abandoned in endless cycles, their streets changing masters again and again, until naught remains but rubble and frost. Kellenport, already scarred by the wars which came before, slowly degrades further with each new assault, and in time it will be reduced to little more than a wasteland of shattered hab blocks, where Marines and Necrons clash amidst the bones of the past. Bastions are fortified, brought down, rebuilt, and contested anew, with the surrounding snowfields becoming increasingly scarred by layers of trenches and the growing structures of the tomb. Even the ice itself has started to grow weak, with glaciers splitting like wounds, devouring tanks and warriors together, entombing them beneath miles of shifting frost. New Imperial ships are constantly arriving in high orbit, passing through the system's Mandeville Point, but they only meet with further Necron vessels shimmering through the ancient Dolmen gates, increasing the intensity and ferocity of the ongoing Void War. The toll of Damnos has been utterly immense. Entire regiments of the Guard have been extinguished, their names consigned to silence in the Administratum records. Several of the ancient dreadnoughts sent by the myriad chapters have been claimed by the enemy, their sarcophagi torn open by Gauss fire, while their pilots are vaporized into ash. The Astartes, for all their prowess, have been ground down over the course of countless battles, their strike forces dwindling to fragments, even as fresh reinforcements are called upon from ultramar and beyond. We currently have no way of knowing exactly how many Imperial forces still fight upon Damnos, as the xenotechnological interference of the Necrons has made it impossible to obtain an accurate count on the Astartes and Guardsmen alike. Yet still, in spite of it all, we do know for a fact that they fight on, for it is utterly unthinkable that Damnos will ever yield. Among the Necrons, the war continues to rage with an equal sense of restlessness. Dynastic lords are said to increasingly bicker amongst themselves, competing with one another for the ultimate glory of claiming Damnos for the Sarrakhan. The old nobility still summon their personal phalanxes, countering tanks with great pylons, guardsmen with new warriors, and Astartes with entropic storms. From all the carnage, destroyer cultists and flayers have arrived en masse, drawing deeply from all the death, for that is all they can ever know. No one is entirely sure as to which lord is found at the head of this invasion, if it is a new noble of the Sarrakhan, or if it was one who survived the Second War. But in many ways it does not matter, as it is doubtful that the death of the leader would halt this war. The Necrons have committed so much already and seem so hell-bent on reclaiming their world that a total retreat is entirely out of the question. Still, for all the silent fury of the Necrons and for all of their reanimated warriors, they seem unable to counter the sheer obstinacy of man. The Imperials upon Damnos do not expect to survive, nor to ever see another world again, as they have resigned their lives to be spent in the pursuit of denying the alien from ever gaining another inch. The Astartes are known to give their lives without hesitation, cutting down scores of warriors, even as they themselves are consumed in beams of gas fire before fading away into mere dust. So the war has only lengthened, with the days dragging into months and the months grinding into years, with there being no end in sight to the terrible campaign. Damnos, at this point, has become a world suspended between two masters, with both mankind and the Necrons claiming it for themselves, yet being truly owned by neither. It is tempting to speak of such deadlocks as failures, or of the lives lost as being wasted, but this would be a mistake. Survival, in this time of ending, is in of itself a form of victory. For the Imperium to deny the Necrons their prize has been triumph enough, and for the Necrons to remain upon Damnos, despite all of the Imperial fury, has been some bitter form of vindication in their dynastic claim. Both sides could look upon the frozen world and call it theirs, and neither could really be proven wrong. Yet perhaps the truth is darker. Wars without end are only to be considered as victories to those who do not partake in the fighting. Conflicts such as these produce wounds which never heal and scars that fester until they poison all around them. Who is to say that another faction will not be drawn towards Damnos, smelling the proverbial blood in the air, being eager to join in on all the carnage? For the Ultramarines, every additional day only adds to the anxiety that it was all for nothing, and that fallen heroes, such as the Dreadnought Agrippan, who died during the initial Damnos incident, were thrown away and wasted on a world never destined for Imperial rule. For the Zarrakhan, however, the longer that Damnos spends outside of their grasp, the more their obsession will grow. It is only a single world, and in the grand scheme of the galaxy, it is inconsequential. Yet they continue to waste resources and funnel more warriors into the maelstrom whilst getting no closer to their overall goals. Thus, the third war for Damnos remains unfinished, and it is doubtful that we will see a conclusion in our near future. The world is still contested, and those who fight upon its ice know no respite, and only hold the knowledge that tomorrow will bring another battle, and the day after, another still. So ends the tale of the third war for Damnos, or rather, so far as any tale may end in this age. For in truth, there has been no end. The war is neither won nor lost, but suspended in the frozen silence of a stalemate. Necron and Imperial forces alike still fight upon the surface, each refusing to yield, and each driven by motives that no force of arms can quench. But someday the war must end, and we must wonder who will emerge victorious and claim the blood-stained ice for themselves. The reason the Ultramarines could not commit more forces to the campaign was due to their prior engagements in the Plague Wars and in the Indomitus Crusade. But perhaps when these conflicts end, they will redirect a portion of the chapter to Damnos and reclaim it for the Imperium once more. Given that Mortarion was banished from Macragge, and that most of the Death Guard has been routed from Ultramar, I believe that this is a likely eventuality, and so perhaps the Snows will one day feel the unbridled presence of the Ultramarines again. With that said, Damnos was and will always be a tomb world, and the Necrons are not ones to abandon their dynastic territories in the face of such an attack. It was theirs in ages past, where mankind's ancestors were but insignificant tree-dwelling mammals, and it will be theirs again, regardless of man having learned to fight and die in the foolish pursuit of glory. Their lords will never forgive the trespass, nor forget their prior defeat, and whether it takes a decade, a century, or an eon, to the Necrons, such time spans are trifling. But for the world itself, Damnos is now a crucible of war. Its ice has been cracked and reshaped by countless bombardments, its cities ground into dust, its seas boiled into storms. It has become a monument to the futility of triumph and a war zone wherein which two unyielding foes replay their hatred without end. Maybe one day, in the far future, peace will return to Damnos. Maybe then the Imperium will finish the job and grind the final tombs into silence at last, or maybe the Necrons will sweep the last bastions into oblivion. But here, as it so stands today, no such end can be foreseen. Damnos remains contested, with its fate unwritten, and its snows forever claimed by both master and invader alike. But with this, my dearest friends, I do believe that this now brings us to our end. Thank you all so much for listening to this final part on our trilogy, covering the wars of Damnos in its entirety, and I do hope that you enjoyed, despite there being no true conclusion to the Great War. Yet all things must come to their end, and so, as I close this chapter once more, I shall wish each and every one of you with a very warm goodbye.